Get Talent podcast.
Danny, how you doing today?
I'm feeling good today.
Yeah. I'm feeling good too. What are we talking about today, Danny?
We're going to be talking about the role of a CEO from Ben's perspective, from your perspective.
Well, and in fairness, these have always been from my perspective and Danny's perspective. So take that with a grain of salt. Anything you've heard up to this point, just want to no warranties here. Yeah, no, I appreciate this opportunity, though, because I feel like CEOs don't necessarily take responsibility for their role in talent. Mm. I mean, that's why you have talent acquisition departments, right?
Right.
That's why you have a CHRO or a people officer, chief people officer. But what I'm seeing out there is the CEO has so much more impact on the talent process than they even know that they realize that they're willing to take responsibility for. And I just want to like kind of talk to the CEOs out there.
Yeah, that's
not that they listen to our show. We've done a sample and the CEOs do not actually tune in. It's not a demographic that's representative. But if you're watching this right now or listening to this right now and you have a CEO, play this for them. I'm talking to y'all.
Yeah, this is a great topic, and I'm really interested to learn more about this. And it's pretty cool in recruitment. We do speak with a lot of CEOs, and you do a lot of that. You know, you really build those relationships with the CEOs. It's really interesting to see how they interact with the hiring. They definitely influence the hiring for sure, whether it's their mindset, their approach. You know, it's so interesting to see how hiring managers have different opinions from the CEO and how that works together. But yeah, I wanted to start out with a little bit of a statistic, which I usually do.
I love it.
Yeah, so I was looking through Zipia, which is an online recruitment services platform. And they gather a lot of statistics in regards to recruitment and hiring. So they said that there are around over 38,708 CEOs currently employed in the United States. 68.5% are men, 31.5% are women. And there are around 332 million people in the United States. So what that shows me is not many people sign up for the life of a CEO.
I think a lot of people want this job. Like if you ask people, like, hey, what would be your dream job? They would say, you know, running a company.
Right.
And yet I was talking to Joe Cardini, who's the president of Bristol Global Mobility, yesterday on a podcast that I do. And we kind of had this epiphany together that, you know, if you're doing the job right and you're there to serve others in your organization, then you're going to get to the top of that organization and turn around or look down or whatever you want to say and find out that you just climbed the pyramid to the bottom and that your job is actually to serve everybody else in that organization and make sure that they have, first of all, make sure that their check's clear. Okay. Make sure their families are therefore supported. Make sure they have the tools to do their job correctly. Make sure they have the opportunities to attain their dreams. And that's a lot. And notice, I haven't talked at all about what you'll receive as a CEO. It's all really about how do I take care of everybody in my organization? And so since becoming a CEO of Glomo, I've realized like, oh crap, like my job really is to make sure everybody else is taken care of, right? And create that cycle of taking care of each other.
Yeah, it's funny because like when I started working with you, the image you have of a CEO is someone who's not that necessarily, right? Like my perception was somebody who's way above. We're there to serve that person. We're there for them. And you know, you don't feel that, you know, you feel like you're the one that's supporting them. You're making their dreams come true. And I like what you're saying. It's you feel the responsibility. It's the opposite to make our dreams come true.
Yeah. Well, because if I can do that for you, then you'll do that for me. Right.
Right.
I mean, that's reciprocity, right? Right. It's like if I forego immediate benefit now in order to reinvest in our people, then they're going to have the tools. And I mean, it's all going to wash out. I'm still going to get mine, you know, but I have to, you know, there's a saying, you know, leaders eat last, right? That I have not subscribed to. I do always eat first. I do like to don't miss a meal. Just kidding. But yeah, I think it's all about putting other people first. So I think, you know, people go into this job with the wrong mentality that, you know, to your point, you know, everybody's got to listen to me. Everybody works for me. And, you know, what I say goes and I'm the unquestioned leader, you know, of the organization and, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, now don't get me wrong. CEOs are probably listening to this right now and saying like, well, you know, we've got to make the tough decisions out there. You know, yes, that's true. And ultimately, you're ultimately accountable for the organization and every decision you make and for the results of it, right? So while there may be a lot of chat around what do we need to do, at the end of the day, it's your call, right? As the CEO, as the leader, because you're ultimately responsible for it. And that's a big responsibility to take on. And so anyway, but really I wanted to kind of talk about talent as this pertains to talent, all this responsibility. And when we look at what are our HR partners worried about right now? The number one thing that our HR partners are worried about right now, I think 80% of HR folks surveyed by HRO Magazine are worried about retention. And I think the issue of retention is probably most impacted by the CEO.
Why do you think that?
One, why do people quit their job? I'll ask you this, Danny. Why do people quit their job?
Well, we found that a lot of...
Besides the fact that a really handsome recruiter named Danny calls him and says, hey, have you ever thought about a new life?
Right. I think I see two reasons. Is they tend to feel underappreciated. And then...
Underappreciated? By who?
By their leadership.
By leadership.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's what I hear a lot. You know, that's probably the biggest one, to be honest.
Yeah. So whose fault is that? The CEO sets the tone for leadership, right? In the organization, how leaders lead, right? The CEO instills and fosters a leadership culture. Is it a toxic leadership culture where everybody serves upward? Or is it a healthy, sustainable leadership culture where everyone serves downward?
Right.
Right? Because you're right, 100%. What's that saying? People don't quit their job, they quit their boss.
Right. It's so true.
So true.
Yeah. And that's really interesting. And I heard you call the CEO the chief people officer, or related to that type of role. Like you were saying that to me the other day, like you feel that. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, that was an epiphany I came up with. I find that the majority of my time and things I worry about are people related. And how do I find people that want to join my organization? How do I keep the people who are here happy? How do I help the people who aren't finding success flip that switch and get engaged and get successful and get productive? How do I show them how much I appreciate them? What fun ways can I cook up to show them how much I appreciate them? Like the fun part of my job is when I sit up at night having a glass of wine, thinking of ways I can wow my employees. What fun trip can I plan? What fun getaway? What fun learning experience can I plan? What fun bonus or incentive can I put in place? What can I do to like make them so excited to work with us? And who out there is not super jazzed about working with us right now? Who's not on fire right now to come to work every day and not feeling it? And why aren't they feeling it? And what did I do or not do to make them feel that way?
Mm.
And it's not really until I can like search inside myself and like my inner inventory and say, have I done absolutely everything I can do? Have my people done everything they can do for this person? Before I'm like, you know what? Maybe it's just not a good fit. Maybe it's just not aligned with that person. You know, we got to go in another direction. Right. But really, like, I'm not really happy when that happens, because I always wonder, is there something I could have done differently?
I love what you're saying. It's like, it's really taking ownership and responsibility.
Yeah. And let me tell you something. Let me make it really real for people out there. I've had a company with zero employees, not nearly as successful as a company with five employees. I never want to go back to zero employees. In fact, I want to double. I want to go to 10 employees. I want to go to 20. I want to go to 40. I want to go 80. I want to go to 160. You know what I mean? That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So unless I'm thinking about people, I'm not thinking about my company if I'm not thinking about people. I'm not thinking about my company if I'm not thinking about people, if I'm a CEO. Because a company isn't a company without people.
You're just thinking about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I'm a shareholder. That's all I am. I'm a shareholder, right? Because, you know, that's the difference between a shareholder and a CEO. As a shareholder, I can buy a stock of Amazon. I don't care about one person in that company. I just want to see how my stock does.
Right.
Right. If I'm really talking about being the leader that I want to be and that I wish I always had, then I have to be like 90% of the time focused on my people.
I mean, I get that feeling every day. And it goes back to what you said. I think everyone on our team is really bought in to the company and what we're doing. And I said this to you when we kind of started out, maybe a few months in. It's like I said, it's more than just a job. And I think that's something that kind of stuck with me. And I feel like that's what you want. You want to feel that from your CEO. You want to feel that every day you're coming in, and it's more than that. It's a team. It's people. Other, like you said, the CEO has to rely, has to make sure that the people that are relying on them are being taken care of. And I think you said it works both ways, right? So, you know, that's one thing that I've really felt, you know, under your leadership. Like, speaking of leadership, you mentioned Joe Cardini. I watched the episode of Love and Reload yesterday with Imani. It was really great. Seems like a really just a great person. I got a really good feeling from watching that. Also what I was saying before, not the kind of the typical CEO that you think of. And you talked about servant leadership. And I wanted to see what you thought about it. I mean, I read a little bit about what it is. But what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think servant leadership, I mean, first of all, it's a word which really indicates your commitment, right? So if you say I'm a servant leader, right, which I heard a talk a few months ago that made me go home and rewrite my LinkedIn profile. And it made me put servant leader in my title, right, in my headline. And I did it not because I was describing who I was, but I did it because I was describing who I want to be. So I'm really not calling myself that. I'm signing up for that. You know, I'm signing up for that. I'm making that commitment to say, hey, y'all, this is who I'm going to be. And guess what? Because I'm saying it publicly on LinkedIn in front of everybody, I know I'm going to be held accountable to it, right?
Yeah.
So I know somebody's going to be like, well, he's not really like that. Or he didn't coach me enough. Or I don't know what people are going to say, but people, you know, what they could say. But I mean, right. This is what I'm signing up for. Okay. And really what it is a commitment to take care of everyone else in the organization before you take care of yourself. Right. It's going back to that age old question in business. Who is the most important person in the business? Is it the shareholder? Is it the employee? Is it the customer? Right.
Right.
And I think I have a theory about this, that it used to be the customer's always right. Which, by the way, this phrase is the customer's always right in matters of taste. Not in policy. Mm. That's the phrase, but people don't say the whole phrase. Mm-hmm. The customer's not always right. But anyway,
right.
So it used to be the customer's always right. And then in the 80s, the shareholder became, you know, greed is good, right? Gordon Gekko, right?
Right, right. Right.
The share, you know, hostile takeovers.
Shifted, right.
The shareholder became number one, right?
Right.
And I think in a lot of organizations, that's still true, especially publicly traded companies, especially private equity held companies. In fact, there's not a lot of companies out there right now that are of size and significance where maybe that's not true.
Right.
But I think there's an emerging, in the last 10 years, there's been an emerging belief that the employee is the most important person in the organization. And that if you take care of your employees, they will take care of the shareholders and take care of the customers. Right. And I ascribe to that. It's really about stepping out on faith. Because you're trying to fix the customer problem or fix the shareholder equity problem indirectly by going through the employee to fix it. But if you just go and address it, you know, one way, then you're going to alienate your employees. And going back to what I said before, you don't have a business without employees. So I say all that to say, to me, that's what servant leadership is all about. It's about taking care of your employees above all else.
I like that a lot. Yeah. And I can see how you do that. And that's what's great about you being the CEO too, is you're always admitting when you want to get better at something or want to learn something. And I don't, you know, I think that's such a great trait, you know, to see that.
Thank you.
In a CEO, you know?
But if I want my people to be like that, I have to be like that.
Right.
Right? If I want to go to you and I want to say, Danny, you need to work on this, you're going to give me two answers. Screw you. It's not a problem. I don't know what you're talking about. That's one answer. Right. Or yeah. Gosh, I never thought of that. Thanks for that feedback. I really appreciate it. I'll try to work on that.
Mm.
Which one do I want? I want the second one, right?
I want number two.
But if I'm giving you number one, I'm never going to get number two out of you.
Right.
If you come to me and you say, hey, we need to work on something, I'm like, screw you. I'm the boss. I do what I want.
Exactly.
Go away. Yeah. My way or the highway.
Yeah.
You know, or if I never admit fault, or if I, you know, am infallible or whatever, then you're just going to stop engaging. You're just going to listen. He don't want to hear it. He's not really about that personal development.
Right. Right. You know? Exactly.
It is what it is, y'all.
Yeah.
Don't like it. Go find another job somewhere else.
Right.
And then next time, handsome Danny, the recruiter calls up like, hey, you want a better life? My people are going to take that call because I haven't been listening to them.
Right.
And taking their feedback. So, right. You know, and it's a challenge because sometimes people in the organization, even in my own organization, are like, well, you know, I mean, it only works if you listen. And I'm like, uh-oh, that gets my spidey senses up. I'm like, whoa, does that mean I haven't been listening to things? And I get sensitive, not defensive, but I get sensitive. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? Have I not been listening? Have you been trying to tell me something? I'm not listening. Let's talk about it.
Right.
Here's the hard part. You ultimately going back to the CEO has to be accountable. You have to listen to people and then sometimes not take their advice and still love them and still show them that they're respected and heard, right?
That's right. And the employee will respect that. You're right. If you go about it that way.
Well, maybe, hopefully, right?
Hopefully, right?
Last night, my 4-year-old told me he doesn't like me as much as mommy. That killed me. But it was on the heels of I wouldn't give him his milkshake before his french fries.
Right.
Now listen, since when did milkshakes and french fries become two bad options? I mean, I think either one you're winning, but whatever. Yeah. You know, but apparently mommy would give him this milkshake first, whatever. Yeah. But point is, we can't always have our milkshake before our dinner, right? Yeah. And sometimes, you know, we have to make harder decisions and forego some immediate gratification.
Yeah.
And that's just the job that we have to. And so some of those decisions are unpopular, but I hope at the end of the day, people love and respect, you know, there's love and respect.
I really like that. And I think, yeah, it comes down to the trust part, right?
Yeah.
You know?
So let's get down to like talent in the weeds, right? So there's creating the leadership culture that you need in the organization.
Yep.
To make people not quit their boss. Two, we need to trust our hiring managers to hire correctly.
Yep.
Three, we need to empower them with the knowledge to know and the tools such as assessments or whatever they need to make fast hiring decisions. Because right now, companies are turning over like crazy. 80% of your company is not going to be there in 5 years. I believe that, you know? And so now what happens with 80% of your company is either going to be A players or B players. And your ability to hire quickly is going to determine whether that room is full of A players or B players in 5 years. So you need to, as the CEO, you need to eliminate barriers to being able to hire quickly. You need to be able to skinny down the interview process to 1 to 2 interviews. You can't have 3-4 interviews. Your people can't be so indecisive and unempowered that now they're waiting a week or 2 weeks between interviews. Mm-hmm. Losing candidates left and right.
Yeah.
You can't require these silly beauty contests at the end of the interview where you need 3 finalist candidates that are all amazing and all will be super duper candidates to come before the leader and do their talent show and then wait a week and a half before an offer comes.
Right.
You do realize that once these people get into a process with your organization and now they got a beautiful resume, they bought a new Zoom suit and and whatever. Now they're armed and ready to go and they're going to be out in the market shopping their skills everywhere. Yeah. You do know that, right?
Right.
You can't get them in your process and think they're going to be there forever because they're not.
Yeah.
So CEOs need to fix those things. CEOs need to hear their employees if their employees aren't willing to come to the office or if their talent folks can't find people. And then they lean on their recruitment partners and they also say, listen, you can either have this specialized niche experience or you can have the geography you seek. Which is it? Can't have both. You know, they need to listen and say, okay, gosh, maybe we need to rethink this. And this is coming from me. I was literally looking at offices this morning, Danny. So I understand the plight of this, but like you got to listen to the people.
Right.
Yeah. And then I think lastly around compensation, right? The CEO needs to go to the shareholders and say, listen, if we're going to build a sustainable company that's built to last, we need to be compensating people at or slightly above market. Here's what that's going to do to your return, shareholder. And you need to be okay with that or not. Because right now I'd rather lose shareholders and have them sell and go somewhere else than lose employees.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a stock market full of shareholders out there. Mm. It's hard to find amazing talent right now.
Right.
So if my company's value on paper and pretend money, which is what the stock market is, goes down and that hurts, whose bonus does that hurt? That hurts my bonus as a CEO, right? It's not all about getting that quarterly quick buck. We got to start thinking long term here.
Yeah.
About building something that's amazingly, you know, built to last. Mm. Thinking long term. So that means foregoing some personal compensation. CEO compensations right now are out of control. What do they make? Like 50 times more than the average worker?
don't know.
It's crazy, right? So how much more could we pay our people if we weren't taking 50x the median salary at our company?
Right. That's the servant leader.
Yeah. I
mean, yeah.
Yeah. Is it like having the biggest yacht in the harbor, or is it like being able to pay people like 5% over market and getting the best people in the building? Listen, I want to have a yacht too. I want to have a yacht. Okay. It doesn't have to be the biggest yacht though. Right.
Right.
You know, right now I'm looking at, you know, I'm renting a house right now so that I could get an office. I had this conversation with my wife. My wife's like, oh, I guess we're not buying a house this year. I'm like, listen, we ain't going to buy a house this year. We're going to rent an office, build our nucleus of our team. And then we'll buy two houses. Mm. We'll have a vacation house down the road.
Right.
You know, I'm not wearing a Rolex right now because I'm investing in technology and for my company.
Right.
And then hopefully we all get Rolexes.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's great. So we all win together, you know?
Yeah. So it's really a lot of, I think to me, I'm seeing like the number one trait is that long-term thinking.
Yeah. And putting other people's needs before your own.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It's really hard.
There's a lot of things that motivate us to become CEO or start a business is we want to personally enrich ourselves.
Mm,
yeah. But we have to realize that the pathway to personal enrichment is not through the quick buck. It's through other people. Mm. If you want to be successful, make other people successful.
That's great.
Yeah.
So final thoughts?
I just continue to think of other people and how can you help other people and do things for other people? And are there things that are in place that are getting between you and your talent, if you're a CEO and you're a leader, that are creating barriers that you put there? Maybe you didn't even know you put them there. Maybe you didn't say, hey, Sally, we need 5 interviews. But maybe you did something and undermined Sally so many times. Then now you've got to interview the person. Your EVP's got to interview the person. The director's got to interview the person. Their direct manager has to interview the person. And then they need to have a 360 interview with the whole team. Like maybe there's just such a distrust within your organization that now all of a sudden we have a 5 interview process. So you got to start thinking and really take an inventory and digging in to how can we lose people in the talent process.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks so much, Ben. This is a great episode. I think a lot of people are going to enjoy this. It's a little different, but this is really great.
Hey, CEOs, be an active part of the talent process and eliminate those barriers and make your talent acquisition people successful. And if you have any questions about it, hit me up. If you want to call me out, say I'm crazy, throw it in the comments. No problem. That's fine. We can have a conversation about it. Connect with me on LinkedIn, Ben Cross. I'm at Glomo, ben@glomo.com. And I look forward to hearing from everybody out there. Thanks for listening today. Get Talent Podcast.